now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Outstanding coverage by the Times today, with one minor exception, but we won't go into that now. Stuart.
Is that my piece?
No. Stuart.
Is that my piece?
No.
Well, we levelled it down now.
You're getting warm.
Poor old Arthur's getting hammered.
No. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of The Ruck. Welcome to all our downloaders, all our listeners. We love you very dearly. And thanks in particular for all the reaction to our podcast with Sam Warburton last week. Very, very warming. You flooded onto all forms of social media, and even people we met in the street had seen it. Thank you very much indeed. What a weekend it was. This weekend, England play New Zealand, Wales play Australia, Ireland play Argentina, Scotland play Fiji, and France play South Africa. Could hardly be any less intense than last weekend. England fans out there, you've got a perfect right to celebrate a dramatic win in a dramatic game. But we're going to hear from our panel now as to how excited we should be. Sarah Motford's on the panel from Rugby World for two reasons. A, she's really good and authoritative. And B, she spent all of Saturday moaning that we hadn't had her on this week. Every 5 minutes. So what's he doing on? You had him on before me. You had him on before me. We've just got the hint that she wanted to come on. Welcome, Sarah Motford.
Woohoo! God, I sound desperate.
Stuart Barnes has just been to a Bob Dylan exhibition, Stuart?
Yeah, a Bob Dylan exhibition of his lyrics and some sketches with them. Mm-hmm. Affordable, not.
Okay, what do they cost?
Well, between 95 and 150,000.
Right. Did you put your name down?
Well, Blowing in the Wind, it was not my favourite song, but it would hang pretty well.
Okay.
Has he got one of Johnny Wilkinson's drop goal? He has, hasn't he?
Has Bob got one?
Yeah, Bob Dylan did one of Johnny Wilkinson's drop goal.
Bob's actually got the photo, the original, hanging on his wall. He's a big fan of England.
Also, we're joined, as you may have guessed, by Owen Slott, the rugby correspondent of the Times, and perfectly understandable for England euphoria. How much euphoria did you feel from your standpoint as an England commentator?
Euphoria is not really a word that I'm very comfortable with, Steve. But I think if you put yourself in the shoes of the England management, which is the key thing here, then I think you've got every right to be extremely pleased. I know South Africa did have some key players missing. When you've got the front rowers and back rowers out that England had, when you've had the 2018 that they've had, not just the results, but the way they played, this was a game they simply had to win. In the end, I thought England scrapped really hard in the second half. They should have been out of sight in the first half. They should have been done and dusted, but they weren't. And they came back and they took their opportunity. And I thought they played some pretty good rugby in the second half. So I'd be pleased if I was Eddie Jones.
Sarah, slightly guarded, but fairly enthusiastic from Stuart there. What did you think?
After that first half, I was amazed England were only 2 points within the lead. And then to win that game was pretty remarkable, really, the dominance that South Africa had. Obviously, all the talk's been about the incident at the end with Owen Farrell, whether it should have been a penalty. I'm not convinced Pollard would have kicked it anyway, given where it was on the pitch and he'd just missed one before. But I think it's a very significant win for England. It takes the pressure off in an autumn where everyone's been talking about if they lose three, is Eddie going to go at the end? Which is quite ridiculous because I don't know who they'd bring in anyway.
Oh, in my opinion, I've never seen a game in which the winner of the game was so devastatingly beaten in all forms of all parts of the pitch by the scoreboard than last Saturday. What was your view on the final whistle? Did you think, how the hell did they get away with that?
I was just absolutely astonished that England won that. I mean, they shouldn't have won it. They should have been 20 points down at half time. I rewatched the first half twice actually, because it's being described as this great kind of Rorke's Drift type effort from England, but actually they showed spirit and character. You can't deny that, but actually the Springboks, they blew four good chances. I mean, they had four lineouts on the 5 metre line. They messed up two of them and overthrew two of them. They should have got at least two of those. It was astonishing that they didn't win it in the first half, and brilliant of England to come back in the second half. And I agree with Barnsley. There were bits in the second half when you're watching England going, there is actually something happening here.
If any candidate for the utter ridiculous nonsense play of all time, it must have been the first play in the second half by South Africa. They've been dominant in the scrum. They remained dominant throughout, including the one where they were staggeringly penalised for wheeling the scrum. The first scrum of the second half, I thought all South Africa would do is scrum, scrum, scrum. They put the ball in, they hooked it. They let the ball go across the backs. They made two ridiculous missed passes, ended up with the wing 20 yards behind the scrum. And we thought, hang on, boys, they may be a great side, but they got no brain. Stuart, for you, what changed and what individuals lifted themselves or came on to make a difference?
Can I just add to that briefly before the individuals? I agree, they were tactically terrible. And it goes all the way through that second half, right up to the fact that New Zealand aren't the only Southern Hemisphere team who've forgotten about the value of a three-point drop goal. They were in the pocket. Pollard's a wonderful kicker of the ball. No one took responsibility. And just on that line out, Malcolm Marks, you've got to slam him for his throw-in. You know, he's on the World Rugby shortlist for Player of the Year. He's blown that. Peter Steftatoy calls the line outs. Why do you just not call to Etzebeth at the front with that drive they've got, or go to the middle? Terrible call. And you have to say, you know, over the years, that's the corner where I've given Chris Robshaw a real old hammering for bad decision making. And one have to say, Sio Khaleesi, as the captain, didn't overrule his man. There was nobody in that South African team making a good decision. And that goes all the way through to Razzy Erasmus, who should have subbed Marks earlier. They made a real mess. For England, the bloke who capitalised on South Africa's ineptitude, I thought, was Mark Wilson. He carried with more dynamism than we expected, but I thought he was very accurate over the ball, and I thought it was wonderful to see a bloke from the North East, because they don't seem to get a sniff of the England thing. And I just thought, here's a sort of a speeded up Dean Richards here, which is a compliment from me.
It is, and that Geordie point is a very good point. I think Jimmy Nail should be brought in for the New Zealand game.
Can I jump in here? That's a broadcasting term.
Sarah's going to get stroppy in a minute.
Okay, Sarah, is he a Geordie? Because he comes from Kendal, which makes him a Cumbrian or a...
That's the other side, isn't it?
Yeah.
He plays there, that'll do.
Or he plays for a Geordie club.
Yeah.
Sarah, I'm attempting to ask you who impressed you in the England team and who turned it round for the men in white.
Okay, I'm not saying that he turned it round, but the person that I left thinking, "Cool, that was made a real difference," was Chris Ashton. I know he was only on for 10, 15 minutes, but he suddenly, as soon as he came on, he was tracking play really well. He was sparking more creative moves than we'd seen from England throughout the game. And for me, that's a real question. Now, I'm not... Johnny May and Jack Now both played very well, but does Chris Ashton get a chance against New Zealand? Personally, I think Elliot Daly was not very good at fullback. He didn't dominate under the high ball, and he butchered two chances when he should have passed. I mean, I've heard a couple of people say he did a very good impression of Mike Brown.
Well,
Mike Brown played really well in South Africa.
Let's be fair. The two Springbok wings, whatever their strengths or weaknesses, they were magnificently athletic in chasing the high ball and catching it. I mean...
But they also targeted Daly, didn't they? I mean,
yes, they did.
Pollard put four kicks on Daly inside the first quarter, yeah, and Daly looked quite rattled, I thought.
I think
that might be a problem.
He was poor at fullback in South Africa as well. In fact, he was worse than poor. And whilst fullback and wing, it's sort of part of the field where you have to have the same skills. Fullback is the sort of managerial position, and I still see Daly as that guy coming off the wing, tracking, picking up loose bits and pieces. I don't think that he manages that team, and I think that, I just say, the one guy in the back three who really turned it round for England was Johnny May. And Sarah's talking about Ashton. The one guy you can't drop is May, who I think week in, week out, is England's best player in terms of consistency.
Just briefly, Sarah, would you play Ashton at fullback instead of Daly against New Zealand?
It's a big call, given he hasn't played that much Test rugby for however many years.
The Ruck's all about big calls.
Come on, Sarah.
Come on.
Yeah,
what,
I would.
This is what we've been
I would.
Right,
okay.
Because New Zealand have got the best kicker out of hand probably in the world in Beauden Barrett. He mixes up very well. He will have watched that game and thought, right, if Elliot Daly's there, I'm going to pepper him.
Did you watch Ashton when he played fullback for Toulon last season?
Not as much as you. You're going to tell me it's really bad.
Which was the game with the kick? Do you remember the game?
Is that a European game?
Oh, when he had to clear it, yeah.
Yeah, when he made a clearance kick and it went backwards.
But is it a game where you actually bring Mike Brown back in because he is so much more reliable under the high ball?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. It's Steve just having a coronary.
So Mike Brown's had all those chances. He stayed on after not hardly making one concerted move from the back with his wings. And after 47 games, he goes, and Daly has one game.
Two.
No,
he's
played all of South
Africa. He's played a bit.
No, but Daly, you can still keep Daly.
We're only talking about one footballer here, and it's not Brown.
I'm not saying drop Daly, but do you move him somewhere else? Like, do you move him onto the wing to say instead of now, or do you put him at 13?
I think this is a concern. Sam Burgess as well, do you want him back?
No, you can't. You can't play him. Why don't you play him at 13? Henry Slade has done everything asked of him really well. So you want to drop Henry Slade when he's just developing into a really good player? You're a brewer. Have you got a thing against Exeter?
But this is a concern because we've been debating Mike Brown and his inadequacies. He's not the player he was. He's not an international fullback anymore. I think we've said that enough times. And Eddie has now. He had Anthony Watson there twice in the Six Nations, and he didn't particularly nail it. So now Watson's injured and he's got Daly playing there, and he hasn't done it yet either. Us chin strokers, we would all put money on Watson or Daly having done the job. And they have neither done it.
Owen, can we just move on to South Africa briefly?
Yes.
They had a great first half. Malcolm Marks, it is very difficult.
You love Malcolm Marks.
I do love him. There was one time where Etzebeth went to the tail of the line out. He's 6 foot ten. He's very liftable. They stuck him up into the sky, and Marks still threw it over his head, which makes you think he should go in for the javelin. But once he sorts that out, he is a fantastic player. They seem to have sorted their selection out. Thought the back row was very good. They've obviously got Faf de Klerk and they've got Willie LaRue to come back. This is surely a team with potential, win or lose last Saturday. And in my opinion, more potential than England.
After the game, John Smith, the former Springbok captain, a World Cup winning captain, apparently threw his arms up in the air and said, OK, so England have won this, but which team would you rather take to the World Cup? And on the back of that game, I would rather go with the Springboks.
Stuart,
if Faf had been playing, then I've no doubt they would have won.
No, of course. Stuart, Dale Endy and Creel, they've sort of reformed a partnership from a few years ago.
Yeah.
My goodness, they played some nice stuff.
Damien Dale Endy was outstanding, and I think, you know, had South Africa won, I'd have gone for him as man of the match without a shadow of doubt. He caused Teo a great deal of problem. He's always been a strong bloke, but what he's added is a bit of footwork. And the other guy is Pollard. He threw one or two missed passes that he shouldn't have, but he's a lovely, elegant player. And if that South Africa pack churn out quicker ball, he's a major threat. So they've got a decent midfield there. I think their back three's coming on well. They miss, as we criticise Daly, and of course they also miss Willie LaRue quite badly. Damien Willemse's a good player. He's one for the future, but he's an impact player. LaRue is a manager and an organiser. So from South Africa, though, the big issue is decision-making. And it's all well and good, John Smith saying, who would you rather have in the World Cup? But England have got blokes to come back as well. And I have to say that I feel that South Africa's decision-making has been very ropey for four games. So we're all saying, isn't Razzie wonderful? But they're blowing games that they could win, and they're doing it spectacularly.
If you put de Klerk back in that team, then you have an organiser and a boss. And South Africa lost that game to New Zealand when they took de Klerk off.
But hang on, Owen. De Klerk's job as well is to put the forwards in the right place to win the game. Now, we can't argue that he couldn't have done that anymore because they were there so much.
Yeah. They couldn't have been any closer.
So the halfbacks did the job for the pack. People say forwards win games, back to side by how much. That's rubbish. Your strategy puts you in the right place. And then if you've got a monster pack, they'll go 5 metres. They were in the right place and they blew it. So I'm not taking that de Klerk thing.
I'm just going to go on now to the England-New Zealand, which is obviously a monumental game. Eddie was talking this morning, Owen, in your paper, that they can they win it? He said, yes, 100%, mate. And Sarah,
he always says 100%,
mate.
We'll come to you just to you all briefly to pick your personal teams for the New Zealand game. I just make two changes. I change the running order of the props. I play Moon to start and Hepburn afterwards because I think that's well the way around. And I would play Sinclair's a great bench man. I'd bring Harry Williams in to start. I would make other changes, but I don't think he will. Sarah, you've got Ashton fullback.
I thought you
fullback.
Were going to bring George in for Hartley.
I said I would make other changes, but I don't think that they will. That is definitely something I do, but I don't think they will.
But this is about our opinion, isn't it, rather than what we think Eddie will do.
I'm always very shy with opinions.
Sarah,
I'm shy with opinions.
That's why we've got her on the podcast. Okay. Our opinion.
Well, what's your opinion? You've got Ashton fullback. What are the changes?
Oh, I'm now, after all that conversation, I'm rethinking my Ashton at fullback, but I think that you need someone to create something, and I'll stick with that.
Okay.
Stick with Nowell and May on the wings, I agree. May, currently it's exclusive interview in Rugby World this month with Johnny May, if you want to read it. But he'd stay on the wing.
Great plug.
I'd probably start Danny Kerr or Richard Wigglesworth. If their game on Saturday was all about box kicking, Ben Youngs in that first half did not do it very well. He was giving them loads of space to the South Africa, that back three, lots of time to run it back. The chase wasn't correct until the second half. It did improve in the second half. Mm-hmm. But if that is your game plan, Richard Wigglesworth's probably the best person in the Premiership doing that.
Hang on, we can save time here. Which ones would you keep?
I think it's worth asking.
No, that's fair enough. I think you make
a
very
England
good point.
Do you think England will box kick to death on Saturday? I mean, will they do that thing?
If they do,
they need to do it better.
Over
absolutely.
And over.
Well, they'll do it slightly differently. I think Ben Youngs, Sarah, actually wasn't looking for everyone to be one. There's that shallower kick and the longer one. And Youngs did that because he doesn't want to go back with a 15-metre pass to take all that distance out of it. So I think he's kicking it quite long and thinking, come on then, run at us, thinking that Nkosi and Diante love to have a go. Vilemza's got a reputation for doing that. I think that England were trying to test them.
But does that work against the All Blacks?
Oh, Steve, no. Against New Zealand, you have to box kick well. Now, Wigglesworth is the best box kicker, but it doesn't just translate from club to country like this.
Also, I just think England are really, really average at recycling their own box kicks. I mean, I don't know, someone should work out the percentage, but it's very poor, the amount of ball they get back.
Tell us if you were Eddie Jones, Owen, if you were Owen Slot, I should say, which changes... Oh, you are Owen Slot.
If I was Slotty, Owen
how many
Slot,
changes would you make this weekend?
I agree with you on the props, and I think he will change that. I understand why he did it... Why he put his runners on first up against Saturday on Saturday against South Africa, and I think he'll swap that. I wouldn't change anything else apart from Brad Shields has not really done it for me yet, which is a bit of a crass thing to say because he's only played 2.5 Test matches, so maybe you should stick with him and he'll learn it. But I would have preferred Michael Rhodes there from the start.
Yeah. And huge question mark over
Shields. Happy to be proven wrong on that, but
would you start Underhill if Curry's ruled out?
Yes,
really.
Against New Zealand, because New Zealand don't like tackling machines who just keep smashing and smashing and smashing. They really don't. I think he's limited in his game, but I think he suits them. And I think the other one we haven't mentioned is Zach Mercer. Mercer came on, and Mercer was really good. And whilst you need, I think you need a back row. Wilson's your sort of all-round bits and pieces, man. If Curry's not right, and I got to say, I thought Curry fell off a lot of tackles while he was on the pitch.
He fell off loads of.
He did. Yeah. And that was a worry. So I would think Underhill, even if he was fit. And I think Mercer, because you've got to remember, New Zealand play their game is based around speed and athleticism. And I know it was a debut for Mercer, but he has looked really good all season. And we talk about, I was at Wasps versus Bath in the second round of the Heineken Champions Cup, and Zach Mercer played Brad Shields off the park. He's a better player. World Cup's 1 year away. Why are you looking for Shields? We do know what he can do. We know what he does in Super Rugby. He's a good player surrounded by brilliant players. I don't think he's the man.
Okay,
you could put Mercer. You could have Mercer at six.
Yeah, that's
Wilson
what I'm thinking. Yeah,
I agree that I'm afraid I've never thought that Curry's a great young lad, but nowhere near for me at the moment. I'm sure he will be one day, but
we have to now.
It's premature. But
we have to plug your friend Sam now, then, don't we? The New Times columnist,
in
his column on Saturday, he said he was a great fan of Tom Curry.
Exactly.
And he also said, which I thought
I knew we shouldn't have had that fool Warburton on the podcast.
What does he know anyway about
Sevens? I want an old Bansy on open side flankers, not bloody Warburton.
But can we carry on saying what Sam Warburton said, please?
Yes, of course you can.
Because he said that his England back row that he would want them to pick was not just Curry in there, but Underhill as well. He wanted the pair of them. The two sevens, the pooper type thing. What would you call it?
Well, that's what Wales have done successfully at times.
Tipperick and Warburton, yeah.
It's fair play. If Sam says it, then we probably have to agree with him, because he's Sam. No, we have to. He's Sam.
Sam, yeah, but Sam now in this journalism thing, he needs to roll up his sleeve and get his hands dirtier. But, you know, he's very nice at the moment.
Okay. Show me your hands, everybody. All right, they're all dirty.
Filthy.
Well done. The All Blacks, is there on Sunday, I read a piece, in fact, I wrote it, saying that the All Blacks, current All Blacks, are the greatest sporting team in history. And I provided some statistics, which is unusual for me. I added them up myself to back that up. Have England got a chance, Sarah?
Great, come to me first. Every team has a chance, but I would say it's a very slim one.
Could it all go really badly wrong, Stuart? Because if they do start playing well, get in the groove, you know what they can do. You're a big fan of their attacking play.
I am. They were incredibly lucky in Pretoria. I thought they played some pretty rugby in Japan against Australia, but they lacked an intensity. And it wasn't a full team, but they leaked 31 points against Japan. By New Zealand standards, they're quite vulnerable, and they often are at this stage of the year. They also, at the back of their mind, they might just be thinking Dublin 1 week later. It's hard to see them winning, but I think this could be quite a tight game.
Owen, the idea Stuart's just raised of the All Blacks possibly losing twice, or at least there's a possible outside chance.
Yeah, they'll be able to get away with one, won't they?
Yeah. Do you think, I suppose it's possible, but do you think England, I mean, what a great win it would be for England, and we'd forget a lot of the last year if they did win. Are they any chance?
How many Lions are playing for England on Saturday? There's a handful of Lions, aren't there? Mm. So they went there and they saw it and experienced it, and they also knew what would really rattle the All Blacks, which is fast up defence as quickly as you could go, give them no time whatsoever. And the All Blacks didn't like that in Wellington or Auckland second time round, did they?
Didn't like it in Pretoria either.
A month ago. Yeah.
And until South Africa lost their defensive intensity, New Zealand was smashed backwards and they were out of the game. South Africa slowed down a little bit and then bang, they went again.
It's okay. Too easy to say that there is a blueprint, because it's easy, because it's not so easy to pull that off. It's a pattern though, isn't it?
Yeah. Can you get your hands dirty now? I just want a winner, and by a certain number of points. Everybody knows it's difficult to do. We don't even know what the teams are, but we're going to be brave and get our hands dirty. Sarah, give us a winner and by a point.
New Zealand by eight.
Stuart?
What? You think there's a chance, but nothing more than that, and it's only eight you're going?
Yeah, because it's at home. I still don't think England are going to win.
Okay.
Dirty hands banned?
Well, I think it's going to be New Zealand by three.
I think I'll go longer. I'm New Zealand by 12.
And I'll go 14. We're going to talk about some other international matches now. Sarah, we come to you first.
We'll stick with you.
Wales and Scotland. It looked like a reasonable win for Wales. What was at the heart of it? What was behind it?
Defence. Well, the Welsh defence was very, very good. And notably, Scotland's midfield defence was, at crucial times, non-existent. Yeah. Hugh Jones fell off George North, who then ran through about three Scotland players to score, like classic George North. Been missing from him for the last couple of years. And Jonathan Davis, trademark handoff on Hugh Jones, and again, a nice try. But it was basically their defence, because in the second half, Scotland did start to play a lot better. They had, in the last 15 minutes, they had quite a lot of possession. They could have, Peter Horn actually went over the line but dropped the ball. Mm-hmm. With a nice interplay with his brother George, which they'd done in the Pro 14 the week before, actually, to George Horn chipping over.
When they dropped it then, did they?
No, they scored it that time. But this in the test match, when it mattered.
You shouldn't drop it, should you?
Well, it was an awkward, but he sort of looked like he grounded it, but it was It was ruled a knock-on by the TMO.
OK, just a quick word about Ireland, Italy. Sarah, we'll come to you first. what did you make of the Ireland, Italy game? I mean, a bit of a nothing game.
I should say
Chicago.
That I don't agree with any of these games being played to start with outside the international window. I mean, Ireland and Italy have both, they've gone all the way to Chicago. Italy have got a massive game against Georgia this weekend. If they lose that, all the whole promotion relegation debate about Six Nations is going to get louder. Ireland have got building up for a game against New Zealand. They left their key players at home. I just think these are a bit, it's too much screaming, let's make some money.
I understand at last that there is a move to go there, then that Regulation 9 will only apply in the window and there'll be no games out the window. Let's just move on to another huge game on the weekend, Wales-Australia. Owen, Wales cannot beat Australia. In fact, they're the only team at the moment who can't. But, I mean, if Wales are genuinely on the rise, surely that is one of the biggest games they've played for a long time.
But how many times have Wales played Australia and we've gone, oh, this time they're going to have to beat them, or this is the biggest... I agree with you, this is their biggest game against Australia, and I think they should win, and Wales seem to have a lot, most of their personnel available, and the Wallabies are about as low as they've ever been. I mean, I can't remember when the Wallabies were this low. So whether Checker keeps his job is another question, etc. So this is the time to get them.
Stuart, huge game in Paris, France, South Africa. We've seen, or we think we've seen, France improving slightly. We think that South Africa, if they had a footballing brain, might be dangerous. Mm. I mean, that is got the makings of a great test match, surely.
In Britain, we're looking at those games in Cardiff and Twickenham, and understandably so, but on a global context, that game's quite important. England certainly will be interested in it because France are in their pool. It's an amazing thing because New Zealand gave them a fair few humpings on the scoreboard in the summer, but France played some good rugby. They got problems at 10 still, but if Lopez is fit and at full tilt come next year, I think they've got a very good team. I think France have definitely turned a corner. Yes, South Africa are a good team if they can find a rugby brain, but that's one of the biggest ifs in the canon of the sport. You know, it's very easy to be big, strong and fast. It's not very easy to have guys who make good decisions. Pollard's got to step up. I fancy this is a game that France can win well, and I think they can put down a little bit of a marker going into the rest of this year and 2019.
Okay, we're just going to a break. After the break, we'll be speaking to Sarah Hunter.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Rack. Good morning, Sarah Hunter, the England women's captain.
Good morning.
Say hello to the England captain, everybody.
Hello, Skipper.
Hello, Skip.
Hi, Sarah.
Sarah, you're just building up now for the first of your autumn internationals. We'd like to know, first of all, how things are going. Met quite a number of new faces in the team. Are you all happy and most people fit?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, really looking forward to getting out there for our autumn campaign. Obviously,
we had a summer off, so we haven't been together since the Six Nations. So yeah, itching at the bit to get out there. And like you say, we've got some new faces that hopefully will get their shot of pulling on the white shirt, and they're deserved. Obviously, they've played well in the Premier 15s, and we're now looking to 2021. So this is really the start of finding out who's going to be there and giving opportunity to players who are inexperienced or who haven't been capped yet at senior level.
And the three games have been taken well since all around the country. But I mean, the first one on Friday is at Allianz Park, home of Saracens. Then you're going up north, Castle Park and Doncaster. Then the big one at home against Ireland. You must be looking forward, first of all, to playing up in the north.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. Obviously, being from the northeast, going and playing an international game in the north is pretty special. And I think it's a really good move by the RFU. We've seen how well France do it in the women's game by moving the game around the country and really drawing on the local support. And rugby's really thriving in Yorkshire, women and girls game. So I think it's a really smart decision by them to take a... hopefully get a new audience, create a fan base, so hopefully we can keep growing the game.
And the opposition, USA, Canada, Ireland, it's very difficult to know what stage of their development they will be at. Do you have any clues, or are you going to treat them all equally, or what?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment. Obviously, the USA is at first. They played New Zealand at the weekend, so we'll have a little bit of information to go on them. Because I think Rob Kane, the former Saracens women's head coach, has gone over there in a new role as head coach, and it'll be interesting to see what he's taken and how he's starting to shape, I think, what's a new look USA side. They've got a lot of new faces in, so at least they've had a game that we can hopefully have a little look over and see what they're going to be like. And then, again, Canada, I think almost at this stage, we obviously played them last year and they had new faces, but I think they've obviously had a year together and they no doubt will have got stronger and have improved since the autumn test last year as well. And then Ireland to finish with. Whenever we play Ireland, they'll always raise their game against us, especially at Twickenham. I think there's a few new faces in their squad as well. So I think 3 years out from a World Cup, you see coaches starting to give people an opportunity to know that if they are going to play in a World Cup, they have to be given time to feel what international rugby is like and build up the caps and the experience that you need at a World Cup. So it'll be an interesting series. A lot of unknown, but we'll take each game as it comes, and we'll have a real focus and emphasis on what we're trying to do and how we're trying to build over the next 3 years.
Sarah, for the first time in almost a decade, it seems like, you'll have neither Danielle Waterman nor Rocky Clark in the team,
yeah.
Which is a huge amount of experience. It's no doubt put pressure on the leaders that are still there. But have you got the same sort of characters coming through as those two to take their places?
Obviously, they're huge characters on and off the pitch, not only for their playing ability and their leadership, but the nature of the people that they are and what they bring to the squad. And I think you see new people and new characters come through, and you look at sort of props and you look at your Sarah Burns and your Hannah Bottomans who are young, up and coming front row players that I have no doubt that with time they'll be able to grow into the characters that Rochelle Clark was. And then you look at Nonny Waterman and people like your Abby Dowes of the world who just need a bit of time. Their characters and themselves, they'll hopefully bring a different dimension. But now sort of Nolly and Rocky have retired and have moved on to things new. It gives an opportunity for these young players to come through and go, I've now got a mark in the sand that I have to meet, and I have to sort of to push on from here. They can't live in their shadows forever.
We just all wish you and the team, Red Roses, all the very best for the rest of the season, especially for USA, Canada and Ireland. And thanks very much for spending time to talk to us today, Sarah.
No problem, anytime. Thank you so much.
I'm going to ask the panel for their God or Goddess of the Week. It's a much coveted award, and I will have the final say today because I'm in charge. So, Sarah, we'll go to you first. Your God or Goddess of the Week?
Just to throw a couple of Irish people in the mix, Jordan Lahmer obviously scored a hat-trick, and Tadhg Byrne, he should start against Argentina this weekend. He's been brilliant for them. Outside of the test window, Jersey scored a phenomenal try this weekend.
Thief.
I thought we were sharing it. So they attacked from behind their own line, under pressure from London Irish. I'm really apologising for this to this guy because I don't know how you pronounce his first name, but Orguy Slowick scored the try. He then scored a winner about the third minute of injury time to give them a famous win over London Irish. The Exiles' first defeat of the Green King Championship
so
season.
Orguy Slowick, I don't think he's been in contention this season yet.
He's not a weekly contender, is he?
If anyone has seen, not
apparently
seen
he's
that,
frustrated about that.
If anyone has not seen the Jersey try, give it a look. It was a great, great try. Stuart, God or Goddess?
I mean, it wasn't a game, was it, at Twickenham for unbelievable performances, and it certainly wasn't from the useless officials. So I'm going to go with our Cumbrian Geordie.
Very good.
I'm going to go with Mark Wilson. A lot of people said, is he really going to do it at 8? He did do it at 8. Yeah, Mark Wilson.
Owen?
Well, I'd like to take us back to St Helier.
St Peter, actually.
What?
St Peter, that's
St Peter,
the name of the ground.
Not St Helier.
Oh, is St Peter and Helier?
Well, the grounds is St Peter, because I did something on Twitter about it and I got berated for getting the wrong part of the jersey.
Right.
I'm Jersey dunce,
well,
so
let's go
I'm helping
on,
you.
Isn't it? How do you know I didn't want to go to St Helier anyway? Maybe something else happened there.
Can you take us back to Jersey?
I'll now take us,
or is it Guernsey?
I'll now take us back to the Green King Championship. So, at the start of this amazing move, the ball came out of the... It shot out the scrum behind the scrum half. So the poor fella, Will Homer, he was under a lot of pressure. He was behind his own try line. He makes Blair Cowan look an absolute fool, doesn't he? Blair Cowan's fumbling around on the floor while Will Homer dances around him. Then he runs round the back of his posts. And you're going, come on, man, you can't be serious. And then he launches this move. He takes two people with him, does the offload, and away they go, which finishes with our friend Orguy scoring this amazing try. But Will Homer was the creator of it, so Will Homer is my God of the Week.
Friend. Okay, well, in that case, I don't need the casting vote because I, as much as I've seen that, admire that glorious try, I'm going to go with my contemporary Stuart Barnes. Love it when people from are brought up by Newcastle Falcons. Now, there's no great rugby schools here. We represented Bradfield College, two from Baslett School and one from Heathfield Community College. So we don't have any of that Eton and Harrow stuff here, but I just think it's lovely when they come up a slightly different way and play with magnificent courage and guts. I hope Mark Wilson stays in the team. So officially, just pipping Orguy, Mark Wilson is the God of the Week. Thank you for listening to The Ruck today. It's Remembrance Sunday coming up. It is absolutely stunning how many people from the rugby community died in the two world wars. I remember reading a book about Yorkshire rugby, and Yorkshire rugby was decimated because they all joined in in PALS regiments. Rugby clubs joined as one. And at the end of the First World War, I think almost half Yorkshire rugby clubs could never reform because they had so many died. So we can just remember in remembering everybody else at Remembrance Sunday, the contribution that rugby players made and how many were lost. Thanks a million for listening to The Ruck. We'll be back next week. The way things are going, Sarah will probably be here again.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.